the things that quite happens when I preach at a church, and I haven't been there for a while, is that the members of the gathered community of Christ spend most of their time wondering which part of the world I've come from. And quite often I will get in the vestibule, thank you, Nigel, but I was trying to work out where your accent was. So I'm going to put any of those questions to bed. I was brought up in Blackburn. Has anybody heard of that? No, you have, yeah. So Blackburn is, for those of you who've not heard of Blackburn, Blackburn is further than Watford Gap. Okay? It's on the right side of the border. I had to say that because Helen's from the other side of the border. Okay. But Blackburn is an old mill town. And I grew up in a very working class part of that town. Anybody watch Coronation Street? Just the one of you. How many of you watch Coronation Street but you're not willing to admit that you watch it? Okay. So Coronation Street, it's that sort of street where I was brought up, with terraced houses, outdoor toilets, and cobbled streets. You get the picture. And it wasn't uncommon that everyone on the streets of Blackburn knew their neighbours. In fact, you could say they probably knew a little bit too much about their neighbours. Certain neighbours, and especially women. So if you watch Coronation Street, women are the focal point of that programme. They're the ones who you might say, which is countercultural for anything in our society, you might say, hold the power and authority all through that show. But in Blackburn and in Yorkshire, I would probably say in other places up north, is that certain neighbours would get a cup of coffee or a cup of tea and then have conversations with each other over the garden wall. And they would have that cup of tea. And even though Blackburn was a very poor town, an area, it would be a cup of tea and a saucer and not a mug, because they are proud people. And they would talk about everything under the sun and often gossip about a neighbour in their street. Of course, you would never do that in this nice place of Southgate, would you? At times, they would have a habit where you'd be sitting at home watching the TV in the evening and a neighbour would just open the door and pop in unannounced. Now, whilst that didn't happen in our house, I have friends that would be a regular habit. But I do always remember my mum saying, oh, the good old days, when you could leave your door open and you wouldn't get robbed. Now, I'd look round our house and I'd think, well, there ain't much to rob here in any case. The thing is, I took all that for granted when I moved to London and realised that people really don't know their neighbours as much in bigger cities and towns. For instance, how many of us sat here this morning at least know 10 people from our street or our estate or our flat or our block? Many folk popping in and out of each other's houses for a gossip, because we all like a good gossip, don't we, about somebody else. A conversation is a novel experience, because we lead busy lives in very different lives. I'll give you a couple of examples. So I live in Oakwood on a very quiet street, and I always usually say that the only thing that happens on my street is that when somebody's learning to drive and doing a three-point turn, and everybody gets excited. But yesterday, Arsenal were playing Sunderland. And because the tubes were all closed, then for some strange reason, there were a lot of cars on our streets. I was in Stoke yesterday working with a group as part of my role from Fiji. And as I'm on the train, there's this WhatsApp message going around from the street. So I signed up when I moved in to the WhatsApp street group. And it kicks off like nothing on earth if something happens. So there was a few extra cars, and everybody's going, why is there extra cars on this? Why is there extra cars here? The other day, so you come out of Oakwood Station, and there used to be a really nice Chinese restaurant there. Yeah? Well, that's closed now. And they had a fire on Thursday night at the back. And so it kicked off on the neighborhood WhatsApp group. Pictures there and everything going, people showing what was happening. And someone put, there was some work going there, and I saw a load of Indians. Now, why on earth, if we live in a multicultural society, if we live in how we love our neighbour, why on earth would you put, I saw a load of Indians working on the roof? Why wouldn't you just say, I saw a group of guys doing some work? The world that we live in has changed. I thought I'd challenge it, but then my neighbour, who is Indian, did challenge it. But I think there is a balance, isn't there, of that safety and wondering what's happening with us, but actually being outright inappropriate. Change has happened. We live in a different world than I came from in Blackburn 25 years ago, to where some of you may also. Over the last few years, and in particular over the last year, we live in a time where there are far-right rallies, protesting, fueled by lies and fear. And extreme racism morphing into violence in our streets. As we've said, today is Racial Justice Sunday. And whilst I think it's a shame that we have to even identify it as a Sunday within the life of our church, we also need to acknowledge that it needs to be spoke of. And it does need to be spoke of from our pulpits, not just in the coffee shops and the pubs. All around the country, every denomination will be talking and preaching God's sermons around this theme. Because let's remember, even if you take that WhatsApp message on Friday evening around, I saw a group of Indians, racism is not neutral. It's not passive, it's not harmless, and it's not a sideshow. Friends, racism in all its forms is ungodly, it's destructive, and it's a sin. Ungodly, destructive, and a sin. I could go on now, but I'm not going to, because there's a bit more to come. Racism is alive and well in our church too, among Christians. When I was appointed in my previous role as district chair, The Synod has a vote, and it decides if you're going to get that nomination to send to the Methodist Conference. I was nominated and I got that vote. And I heard a couple of days after that somebody had said, "You'll make an okay district chair, but it's a shame we haven't got a black one." The other week I was doing communion in an all black congregation. And I'm stood behind the table, and behind me, and bear in mind, I'm half Welsh and half Pakistani. We'll have a conversation about what that means after. It's always a good bit about it. Behind me was a white, blue-eyed, blonde-haired Jesus. Now, I asked you, you've got a non-white Methodist minister serving the holy mysteries, and they decide to put a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white Jesus. So racism, friends, is not just about black and white. It's not about black and white. How do we, as God's people, treat the stranger and the outsider in our midst? How do we treat the refugee, the migrant, the foreigner? And I think that's at the heart of the parable of the Good Samaritan, which was read to us this morning. Jesus expands on the command in Leviticus about loving our stranger. And the parable of the Good Samaritan, the familiar since Sunday school, has been there. Settled into perhaps our nice, little warm, comfortable space of our minds. How many of you, during your Sunday school days, acted out the parable of the Good Samaritan? We've all been there. Because if it does, you read it just on its page, it evokes feelings of helping others, folk around us. And that's good. And how many of you have said, or I've said, to somebody casually, "Oh, you've been a good Samaritan today." But we don't actually think quite often about the parable having to do with refugees or outsiders. But it's got everything to do with them. It's about them. The parable of Jesus is Jesus. The parable is Jesus' response to the lawyer's question. The Jewish expert in the law and the commandments is testing Jesus and trying to justify himself. He was a good person, a respected society, a model of how righteousness should interact with their neighbours. Let's delve a little bit deeper. The lawyer, he asks, "What shall I do to inherit eternal life?" Now, Jesus is a bit of a tinker, isn't he? He doesn't answer the question, he turns the question back to him. Great politician, isn't he, really, when it comes down to it? Never answer the question, just ask another question. "What do you read in the Old Testament law?" Now, the lawyer knows this and gives the perfect answer. "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, mind, strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Then go and do this, and you will live." It isn't enough just to know the words of the law. Now, this challenge may have worried the lawyer because he thought he was already doing things right. and he thought he was doing what Jesus was actually asking him to do. And so in his mind, he was asking a very legitimate question. Who is my neighbour? Who are you asking me to love? Now, on a Sunday morning, if I said to you, who is your neighbour, when you looked at this passage, of course you'll say it to me, Nigel, everybody's my neighbour. Because that's the stock answer, isn't it? I wonder if we took our community of Christ outside to the coffee shops in Southgate or Enfield or wherever you live and ask, who is your neighbour? Perhaps the answer would be Joe Block, who lives next door. Or Gladys. Friends, as the community of Christ, yes, all are our neighbours. But that doesn't mean we treat everybody as our neighbours, because we can say it with words, but how do we live that out with action? Because Jesus goes far beyond most people who live next door to us and things like that. Jesus brings in the Samaritan. Two different people from two different worlds. Jewish would never mix with the Samaritan. It's a bit like, this is probably pushing the analogy a little bit more, okay? A bit like, so I'm half Pakistani and half Welsh. I have no idea how to speak Pakistani and I have no idea how to speak Welsh. But you know, when you go to a small village in Wales, if an English person walks in into the shop, what happens? They speak Welsh. Quite often, they speak Welsh. If I go to a local, say, very traditional local pub, they live because it's a Methodist, but there you go, cool, just bypass that one. And you're in a village, right? The reality is, I walked through the door and I looked up because I look different. Samaritan, Jewish, never shall the twain meet. But in the previous chapter of the Gospel of Luke, it tells us how Samaritans refused hospitality to Jesus and the disciples. And now he sent them out to travel dangerously road, on dangerous roads with thieves late in the evening. In an uncomfortable turn between the Samaritan and the Jew, the hatred enemy shows an incredible care to the Jew. So when Jesus turns to the lawyer and asks, who do you think was the injured man's neighbour? There is no doubt that Jesus' parable shocked the lawyer and infuriated the disciples. I don't think they ever expected to be told to love those terrible people. How could the Samaritans be their neighbour? Each day in our news, and even only this morning, if you were to watch Laura Koonsberg or Sky News when they have the debate programs, we hear constantly that we live in a broken world. We live constantly, and we hear constantly that we live a broken world. You may have said that yourself. You may agree with it or you may disagree with it. I don't particularly agree with it. It's just like the narrative where people say the Methodist Church is dying. I don't agree with that the Methodist Church is dying. Yet we may be losing numbers, but that doesn't mean we're dying, folks. In the parable of the Good Samaritan, Jesus rewrites the meaning of neighbor. It's not just the stranger we are to love, but people. Not just the stranger, but people. People of mixed nations, people of mixed marriages, people of mixed customs. Because from Jesus' point of view, our neighbors are our outsiders. Many asylum seekers and refugees are battered and bruised. Part of my role is to work with people within the global communities within the Methodist Church and engage with them and share God's love and help them and help the church as a whole. Not to make people who are different from me and you as outsiders, but to say you bring a valuable contribution to the life of the church. We know in this area of London, we know in other areas of London, in our country, that many people who are seeking asylum and refuge are battered and bruised. Like the Jewish man in the parable, left to die, how do we live? Love the Lord your God with all your heart. How do we live that in real time? Love your neighbor as yourself. The neighbor that Jesus describes. Not how we want it to be. How do we start as a community of Christ here today? Living as a disciple of Christ is not rocket science. It's about lived experience. And so I think it is really simple about how we love our neighbor as ourselves, the neighbor that Jesus describes through this parable. Greet them. Talk to them. Even say hello. Or extend hospitality if you can. Invite them for a meal. Support them. Offer them shelter. And yes, those are all practical and really meaningful things. And some will be able to do some, and some will be able to do others. But most of all, for us as the community of Christ, is to show them the love of God through you. Show them the love of God through you. Friend, as we come together and on this Sunday as we reflect on racial justice, a Sunday which should never, never be there, but it's there because we need to continually to remind us who is our neighbor. And it is the responsibility of each of us, every single one of us, who calls himself a disciple of Christ, to challenge racism in all its forms. And when I say that, it's not just about white people being racist towards black people or Asian people or refugees let's be honest, it works the other way around as well. Let's not pretend that it doesn't work the other way as well. And so, in whatever form racism takes, if someone blames foreigners for sickness in our society, point out to them that the problem is not their fault. If the media or political leaders peddle narratives of hatred, division and blame, remind them that their messages are not keeping with Christ's gospel. The Good Samaritan risked his life to save the Jewish man. The least we can do, friends, is to risk our comfort, our ease. For that is the calling to Christians. That is the calling of the community of Christ that we are part of this day. If we remember nothing from this sermon this morning, remember to love your neighbor as yourself. Amen. As we invite Helen to come and share with our prayers of intercession for our church and our world, we sing together, "Make Me a Channel of Your Peace."